that really your idea of how to run a newspaper?
I don't know how to run a newspaper, Mr. Thatcher. I just try everything I can think of.
I know newspapers backward, forward, and sideways. I can write them, edit them, print them, wrap them, and sell them.
We need a woman. We need Murphy.
You need a lot of things, pal. That doesn't mean you're going to get them.
You realize you were talking to a journalist.
I'll tell you what, Fonzie. Since you're such an investigative reporter, you figure it out.
If I revealed my sources, you wouldn't talk to me.
Yeah, that'd be terrible.
Come on, Elliot. The public has a right to know a few things.
Where does it say that?
There's a sign on my desk.
Can't you're a newspaper man.
That's why I'm quitting. I want to go someplace where I can be a woman.
You know what? You got spunk.
Well,
I hate spunk.
You want to be a disc jockey.
Very much so.
What the hell, you're an idiot.
Just do your job well and you'll be fine. Because when Ed goes, Jimmy's going to make me news director.
That's the camera. When the red light goes on, that means that the camera is about...
I know what I'm doing. Just cue me and then stick a sock in it.
This is Two J's in a Pod. I'm Mary Ellen Murphy with WGHN Radio, and she is...
Sarah Leach with the Ottawa News Network.
It has been a very busy week. Sarah and I yesterday ventured out to Ada. You know, and I live in Grand Rapids. If I lived along Lakeshore, I would have said, let's drive together.
Right, right.
We have lunch or something. But we were out in Ada. We were right by Amway.
Yes.
I saw all the flags.
Yes, I felt like I was an international traveler.
It was weird. So we met at a library community center in Ada, and we did a podcast. The name of the podcast is Eavesdrop with Mina. So you and I did a podcast for 90 minutes.
I know.
And we go into this studio, and the studio has like this door that weighed like 300 pounds. It was like a door they would have used in a fallout shelter.
I know. That's definitely where I'm going when the apocalypse happens.
I'm telling you. You and I sit down. No headphones, no clocks, nothing. It's not a radio studio. It's a podcast studio.
Yeah, it was really cool.
We sit down. She's amazing.
Yes.
And she just drew a lot out of us. And the next thing we know, 90 minutes goes by. And
I know. Remember when we said we weren't sure what we were going to talk about for 90 minutes? And then we kind of look at each other going, we could have kept talking for like another hour.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The time just went by. And she asked us all kinds of questions about, you know, Ottawa County and in our background and whatnot. And then I thought it was really interesting. You know, what did she say? It'll be about 6 weeks before she posts it?
Yeah, they really do. I mean,
I thought that was interesting.
Whole thing, the post-production, and she said that it goes through like four pairs of eyes and that there's like this whole post-edit,
yeah,
you know, process. And I just thought, well, you really have your stuff together.
Yeah.
You're really buttoned up over
I do
there.
A little editing and then slap it up and
here
it is.
I heard it's a sea of chaos. So.
There you go. Anyway, that was fun. It was really, really, it just felt really good to be on the other side,
yeah,
of the microphone for me.
Yeah, to meet someone on the outside. Yeah.
Yeah. Who just, you know, she started her own podcast during COVID and it's on Spotify. So mm-hmm. I guess in 6 weeks we'll be up there and then we'll go back in 6 months and talk to her again.
Yeah, she said that she wants us to be the first repeat guests.
That's nice.
Had. Yeah.
Wow. All right. Busy week. What did I do this week? Let's see. I covered a press conference with Rep. Hillary Scolton and Haley Stevens. They talked about Medicaid.
Mm-hmm.
I had Medicaid. I just wanted to throw that out there because I talked to them privately just to say that, you know, I had Medicaid at one point in my life when,
right,
I was in between jobs. And
right,
they said, you know, you should share that. You know, people don't understand what the face of Medicaid is.
Right.
And it turned out I ended up having some cancer and I had Medicaid and it basically saved my life.
Right.
And I need to share that story more because the majority of people that are on Medicaid work.
Right. And I think that
full time.
COVID also taught us a lot about how that is a safety net for people.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
A lot of people went on to Medicaid because basically the world economy kind of ground to a halt,
mm-hmm,
and there needed to be care for these people. And now, as we've mentioned before, especially in Ottawa County, we're facing a funding shortfall in our community mental health department for the county because,
right,
of Medicaid funding, because now people post-COVID are falling off those roles.
Yeah.
And so that creates a funding, mm-hmm, you know, inequity there.
Yeah. I had State Rep. Greg Van Workum on the air today, he told me that he's going to be the House Chair for Medicaid and Behavioral Health. And I told him to keep an eye on things and, you know, that the face of Medicaid has changed. And
right,
it's just, and in some cases, and I'll throw this out there too, in some cases, people are better off being poor.
Right.
Being poor so that they can get health insurance.
Well, and I, you know, there's all of this pressure. Well, historically it's always on the middle class, right?
Right.
But there's like this window where you make too much money to qualify for a lot of these programs, but you're still poor. Mm-hmm. And there's a ton of people in that space. Mm-hmm. It's almost ridiculous. And we really need to find some solutions for that, which I think never gets enough attention.
You're right. Yeah, it just makes me mad. My blood is boiling right now, but we don't have video and you can't see that. So I have an email here. This is interesting. This is dated on February 20th from Trisha Blumenbergen, West Michigan Media Relations Specialist with CMS Energy, Consumers Energy. She wanted to see if she could come on the show on Monday in anticipation of the Ottawa County Board meeting Tuesday. So I did send her an email and gave her a time. I'm waiting to hear back. What do you think this is all about?
Well, I actually know Trisha. I met her for the second time last week
because
I also was curious about the consumer's energy response to the conversations that we saw in the planning and policy meeting that was on February 11th in front of the Ottawa County Board of Commissioners. Mm-hmm. And this is important because, so in 2021, Consumers Energy announced that it was going to be closing the J.H. Campbell plant that is in Port Sheldon Township. Mm-hmm. In 2025. Mm-hmm. And it was noteworthy because this was 5 years ahead of schedule that the company previously planned to decommission this plant. Mm-hmm. So this plan has been in place for years. Mm-hmm. So now, as we're facing the planned closure, which is scheduled to be at the end of May this year, there's all of these concerns from these local townships saying, well, what about the stability of the grid? And they're pointing to some grid agencies that help sort of monitor, you know, as assets come onto the grid and are taken off of the grid. It's a lot to track. And Michigan is currently part of a subsection of the U.S. grid. Mm-hmm. that includes 14 other states.
Okay.
And one province in Canada. And so,
who knew?
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot, you know, going on. But what I think is really important that consumers told me was that they produce energy in Michigan. They serve customers in Michigan. They're responsible for the energy production and customers in the Lower Peninsula. Mm-hmm. of Michigan. And so that they make sure to ensure that service. So when you have conversations about, well, what about the stability of the grid? Well, we can only account for what is happening in Michigan because we don't live in Ohio and we don't live in Illinois and mm-hmm. we don't live in Louisiana. So it's complicated, but I don't necessarily think that the concern and the panic is necessarily warranted because consumers gave me a pretty good assurance that they are prepared and that there's not going to be any disruption in service.
They've had a lot of time to prepare for this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and they explain this in depth. I mean, you don't just flip the light switch on and off. I mean, this is you have to drain things. You have to ship things. You have to dismantle things. You mm-hmm. have to work with staff and kind of monitor like where they're going to be. And there's like all these, you know, processes. And it takes 5 years for a plant to be decommissioned, they
said. Wow.
So that process doesn't even start until they stop, like literally stop the energy production at the end of May. Then a five-year process to decommission it starts.
Got it. Okay.
I mean, they have they're always operating on a 20-year plan. And these are huge, massive assets with a lot of working parts of people and goods and services, you know, involved. Mm-hmm. So it's not just as simple as, we're a little worried, so we're just going to keep, you know, delaying this for a few more months. It's not as simple as that. They've been working with their staff, too, to tell them that, you know, hey, this has been the plan for 4 years. Mm-hmm. People have made arrangements with their lives.
Wow.
Yeah. It's just not that simple.
And so there's a board meeting Tuesday on the 25th. I do have Board Chair John Teeples on the show on Wednesday mm-hmm. on WGHN at 8:45.
The Crockery Lake contract is on the agenda for Tuesday.
And they voted on it to approve the contract. Now, is this a controversial contract? Yes. Mm-hmm. Are there issues with the contract? Yes. Is it being challenged in court? Also, yes. Mm-hmm. So that money has not been paid out. And so I don't know exactly what mechanism they're going to use to revisit that. But if I were a betting man, I would think that they're going to try to find a way to get out of this contract.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay. It's, you know, trying to keep up with what's happening nationally is hard, let alone locally.
Yeah.
And then I get a text from, from one of, you know, my colleague, Jesse. Did you see what's going on with Grand Haven Public Schools?
Oh, my. You know,
because he has a daughter as well.
Boy.
This affects you. I know.
I have so many feels right now. So what is happening is that there is a reorganization of elementary schools in the Grand Haven area. My mm-hmm. kids happen to go to Grand Haven Public Schools. The elementary school in question is Mary A. White, mm-hmm. which is currently operating from young fives through fourth grade. And it is going to be turned into an early education learning center. Mm-hmm. So the young fives and the preschools and a lot of other programs are going to consolidate into this one building. I have a current fourth grader and second grader who go there. So now they're going to be, well, the fourth grader is going to age out into the middle school next mm-hmm. year. So that's fine. But mm-hmm. my youngest is going to be rerouted to a different school.
Right.
I think we're seeing a lot of this because Grand Haven Public Schools said that it projected that it's going to have a declining enrollment of 650 students over the next 5 years. Now, I know that that sounds like a big number.
It does.
But when you divide it by five and then you spread it across like 15 different buildings, it's not as catastrophic as it might appear.
Okay.
I fully respect the school districts, you know, trying to address, you know, evolving criteria and requirements from the state and what their community needs are in real time. I just think that this was really poorly communicated because we didn't receive this notification until after 5 o'clock yesterday. And we only had, you know, so that was on Thursday. And I had to have a conversation with my 7-year-old at the dinner table that she couldn't go to school at her school next year. Okay. And all of the reactions that you think would happen from that.
I remember this.
Happened, and she asked all these questions that I could not answer because mm-hmm. nobody knew that this was coming.
That's a lot for a young kid to deal. I remember when the diocese was threatening to close yeah. my kids' Catholic school. My kids came home one day.
It's very traumatic for young kids.
Yes, it is.
I remember when I was in elementary school and a similar thing happened. We were in a growing district, and that was Lance Cruz Public yeah. Schools in Macomb.
Yep.
And we had too many students, and so they actually had a building that hadn't been used in quite some time. So they opened it to have it as a second middle school.
Mm-hmm.
So we all thought that we were all going to be a middle school together. And then towards the end of our last year in elementary, they announced that they were going to be splitting the student body into this north and south construct, where then we would all funnel into one high school.
Right.
3 years later.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of us didn't see each other for 3 years.
Wow.
And I mean, it was traumatic.
Yeah.
I remember being very upset. And by the time that you run into people in high school, 3 years is a long time.
You're not the same person anymore.
You're not friends
yeah.
anymore. You don't know each other anymore. And I just like, yeah, it's hard. It's hard on kids.
So this is going to affect a lot of things because there's daycare centers in the area that people
yeah.
use by Mary. It's
right.
going to affect a lot.
Yeah, I actually am not in the way that the district is organized. My kids are supposed to go to Peach Plains
uh-huh.
Elementary.
Uh-huh.
We opted through schools of choice to go to Mary A. White because our daycare is right down the street.
Right.
And so they would send a bus. Mm-hmm. And so we had arranged, you know, preschool and after school care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's this whole system. And I've had three kids go through this whole system.
Right.
This has been a place for 13 years.
Exactly.
And I was so close.
Oh, man.
To getting through. And now my youngest has two more years to go.
Mm-hmm.
This has thrown a ton of things into chaos for many families like mine, where now I'm going to have to figure out pre and after school care and make adjustments in my work schedule and my personal schedule.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm a single mom. I share custody with their dad. And we're already talking about times of days that is during the business day.
Right.
I mean, again, I kind of go back to the district saying, could you just have given us a heads up that you were even considering this? Because that would have helped.
Oh, man.
But ripping off the Band-Aid, I think a lot of people kind of, you know, think that that's the way to go. I know that it was probably a strategic decision to do this after the business day was closed mm-hmm. so that they didn't get angry phone calls.
Yeah.
Look, I get it, but I think that a big dose of compassion was missing in this, the way that you handled this.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to reach out to the school and the superintendent. And
I already sent my mom email.
You did. You sent your mom email.
Yes, I did.
Will you go to the meeting Monday night? There's
yes,
a parent
I will.
Meeting. Okay. All right.
Well, I called my daycare and they didn't know. So then I had to forward my email to them. And now this potentially could eliminate their school agers program, which could lead to staff firings and or layoffs, because if they don't have that need, then they don't need those teachers. I mean, there's ripple effects to these kinds of decisions. It's not just a straight transaction. And as far as I'm aware, the staff at these schools didn't know until yesterday either.
I was just thinking yesterday how much I missed having my kids in school, and I just missed being on home in school.
Well, hopefully this maybe put that feeling to rest for you.
Like, I wore my snow pants today, and I was like, oh, you look like a playground aide today, Mary Ellen, you know, because I love doing that. I was thinking about that, and now I don't miss that at all.
I know.
And that's why I say to my daughter, when she starts working outside of the home, and if she, you know, that when your kid is sick, I'll be the grandma to go pick them up, because I remember what that was like. And I've worked childcare in the schools. It's the grandparents and the aunts and uncles that are helping out.
It really does take a village. And I don't have family that lives here.
I know. So, I know you. Well, you know what? I will help. I will. Well, I'll take your kids to the beach.
I will say that one bright spot of COVID was that I was able to do a lot more things. Like, I was able to be available to my kids, because before I was driving back and forth to Holland every day. Mm-hmm. And it was always like this battle. Like, when I was married, it would be like, well, are you going to go pick up the kids, or am I going to go pick up the kids? Am I going to, you know, annoy my boss, or are you going to annoy your boss? Or
I remember.
So it was a constant struggle. So now I'm sort of the default, and I can still work, but it does impact work, because now the lines are blurred between your personal life and your professional life, because they're both in the same space.
That's true.
So it is difficult to manage when you have a sick kid, or you have them on, like, you know, winter break. And you have to say, okay, watch your TV show, because mommy has to work for an hour on the computer and I can't pay attention to you. Go walk the dog or something. So it's just a constant balancing act.
So you don't ever turn it off then?
Oh, no.
I don't either.
No.
Okay.
In fact, it's to the point where even when I'm alone, I have to have, like, I can't see my television in the workspace that I have set up for myself. Mm-hmm. I put the television on kind of at a low level, because I just need noise, because silence, it makes me nervous, because I'm so used to working in chaos and just noise and just managing that. I have to have some background noise.
Wow.
I know. I'm like, I'm damaged.
If you're damaged, what does that make me?
It just goes to show you, it's always something.